Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Joining us on the line this morning is Daniel Eloff. He's a writer, he's a lecturer, and he is an attorney at Hunter Spearce. A very, very good morning to you, Daniel. Thanks for joining us once again. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. Fine, thanks, and yourself?
Well, I'm all right, except that it's very, very difficult to not feel exasperated when these stories just keep coming.
Indeed. I mean, it's super depressing that we look at this story and we're sort of, oh yeah, just another story, you know, just another corruption tale. And if you compare it to some of the other major corruption scandals of the past two decades, you know, if you talk about the money involved, it's one of the smaller corruption scandals of the past few years.
It's more significant, A, because we put Mkhize on a bit of a pedestal. We thought in the beginning certainly he was doing a very good job. We respected him. And secondly, this is part of the new ANC. This is not the so-called old ANC where we look back and say, gosh, those people were corrupt. This is happening right here, right now. So this sends us the message that, hold on a minute, has anything actually changed? So that this, although the quantum is small and 150 million is nothing to sneeze at, but it is smaller compared to some of the other telephone numbers. I think that this is more significant in a way.
No, indeed. It just goes to show that, you know, our memories are quite short when it comes to politics, because we did place Zweli Mkhize on a pedestal, you know, and I think it's sort of natural. Because we had this looming pandemic, and you sort of want a hero and someone who you're able to put your trust in. Yeah. But if we really do recall correctly, Zweli Mkhize has been part of ANC politics for quite a number of years. He used to be the MEC for health in KwaZulu-Natal during the entire treatment action campaign and the HIV, real bad public health pandemic that we had nearly two decades ago. So we keep forgetting that, you know, yes, it's part of the new ANC, but it's just, you know, the same people involved. And I think we should need to remember, Zweli Mkhize is a shrewd politician. Any person who's able to navigate 20 years of South African politics successfully and end up where he's at has to be quite a shrewd politician. And, you know, he's connected. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is, we did place him on a pedestal, but we often forget, and our memories are quite short, that a lot of these people have previously been involved in some form of corruptional scandal, in the past.
What's to be done about it? You know, we spoke yesterday to somebody involved with ETOLs, and to some extent that was the first time South Africans flexed their muscles in a strange sort of a way when they said enough is enough. A tax revolt obviously is illegal, it's problematic, it can bring the country to a standstill. When the options are so limited, what do you think people might do?
Yeah, well, there's this lovely quote of the American civil rights activist Frederick Douglass, who says a man's right rests in three boxes: the ballot box, the jury box, and the cartridge box. Mm-hmm. Now, I sincerely hope we don't ever need to get to the third option. But I mean, that's the point, is that's where it starts. It starts, you know, August of this year when we get to a new election. It starts by, you vindicating your right. So that's the first point. The second point regarding the tax revolt is, I mean, as an attorney, I'd never advise a person or any group to say, yes, withhold your taxes, because it is illegal, like you mentioned. But the question is not whether it's not a question of legality. It's a question of politics and reality. And it will happen regardless of, legal advice or not. Because a tax revolt is not something I believe that's going to happen, because there's this decision, this active decision that's made by a group of people and they say, okay, henceforth we will stop, you know, paying our taxes. It's something that happens incrementally, and it's something that happens on a grassroots level. which eventually sends the message to government. The same with Outer. I mean, it happened naturally, and then there was this necessity for an organization to actively, manage and I don't want to say control, but to sort of run the entire process. But first, it started with public sentiment shifting, and that's the point. Is I think we're well progressed in the point where public sentiment has gotten to a point where a tax revolt is starting to become a legitimate a concern, perhaps, in South Africa.
And I guess it's not all or nothing. And I think that's the word you used is incremental. Yes. And I think that's important. So it might start with e-tolls and then move on to TV licenses. And I always laugh at pay your TV license. It's the right thing to do. Well, I'm not really sure that it is, but it's not the point. And so it goes. So it might be that people certainly can't stop paying their VAT when they buy a product, and that's of course a form of tax, or when they fill up their car and they're paying for it in their petrol. But maybe they'll look for other ways to say, you know what, I'm actually not paying that. I am going to try and get away with not doing this or that or the other thing because I don't trust where my money is going.
No, definitely. I mean, and this is why I mentioned that a tax revolt is something that happens naturally. It's not a decision made by a group, and then it from there forth, the tax revolt has started. If you just look in history, it's exactly like you mentioned, in the USA, the Boston Tea Party, it started in a very particular point in the country, and we just see the same happen in various other places. And it's like you said, it's something specific. It's a particular thing. That then gains momentum and it actually becomes a movement.
The other problem, of course, for South Africans is we've also been dealt with incrementally. And it's always people use this, putting a frog into a pot of cold water and turning it on, even though apparently that was misproven on Mythbusters or something, but never mind that. Most of us who have children find a way to send them to private schools. If we live in a neighborhood that where we're concerned about crime, we pay for private security. So our security, our education, our medical care, now we can't rely on Eskom or government, particularly around electricity, so we buy inverters and generators or whatever it is, and there's all this talk of, well, can't we find a way that our own neighborhoods could generate its own power? We're going to see the same thing with water, because that started happening as well. Potholes, and the roads, we've just seen a collaboration between Johannesburg Council, municipality, as well as Discovery and one of the other insurance companies, I can't remember right now, but it's irrelevant, where they're going to start contributing to fixing the roads. So at the end of the day, government, in my view, seems to be stepping further and further away from responsibility with regard to the very basic things that we assume that we're paying our taxes for. And at the end of the day, it does become a problem when I turn around or when people turn around and say, but hold on, everything I'm doing virtually, and I joke, I say that if we had to put up a wall, actually there are walls in most of our neighborhood, but if we had to put up passport control, we could practically declare independence. All we need is our own electricity supply and we're there, but most houses have it anyway. So we're becoming less and less reliant on government. Government is obfuscating its moving away from its responsibility, and it has to be a question as to where our taxpayer money is actually going.
No, definitely. And it's like you said, in a way, you're being double taxed because you're paying taxes, but you don't get the services that you necessarily pay for. The horrible part of this entire thing is that a lot of South Africans are able to provide, pay taxes and pay for private school, pay taxes and get private security. They're able to sort of manage this double payment. But the majority of South Africans aren't able to do so. And I mean, that's the first argument someone would make against a tax revolt. They'd say, but what about the poor and vulnerable who are not able to survive without government support?
Which is a fair point.
Which is exactly, it's completely a fair point. And just from, you know, humanitarian perspective, you don't want these people to just sit without any support from government. But the question then becomes, well, I think we'll reach a point where government will no longer be providing those services to the people, and the question will sort of become moot. And we're sort of already getting there. We see people standing in queues for government support. We see money being, earmarked for the poor and vulnerable that don't reach the poor and vulnerable. And I think that's the point we'll get to where something like this might actually be successful, where we'll successfully be able to have our voices heard, because we won't have that extra responsibility on the poor and vulnerable, because they already have been forgotten by and left behind by government.
The problem is, as Karen M says, she says, can't stop paying taxes because we're already so short of money to repair roads, water, electricity, etc. It needs to start at the ballot box, but unfortunately the vast majority of voting public get paid somehow to continue voting for the ANC, and I think this is a very valid point.
Yes, definitely. Well, so the one thing to consider, and this is why I mentioned earlier that I think something like this will happen naturally, is in economics, they have this simple concept of the Laffer curve, which says that when taxation rates get to a certain point, the higher they go, the less tax revenue a government gets. And South Africa has passed the peak of a Laffer curve. It sort of looks like a horseshoe, if you can imagine it, because the lower you are on a tax rate and the higher you go, the more money you get. And at a certain point, the reverse starts. And South Africa is at that point where we're raising tax levels, but SARS is collecting less and less money. And I think that's the point where, we get to that the tax money we're paying, even though it's more, we won't necessarily be able to sustain South Africa and continue on that track. And somewhere government's going to have to, you know, get a good wake up call, or we're going to have to give them the wake up call so they realize, well, we can't continue this way.
And let's just hope that people do take that step at the ballot box. I guess the campaign should be for everybody, is just anybody but vote anybody but the ANC, and it really doesn't matter who it is, because I think the other concern is that many people don't feel they have a strong and decent alternative. But maybe that, and so therefore that needs to be the message. It doesn't matter if your alternative is a great one, just anybody but the ANC. Maybe that needs to be the message.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think we need to realize the question is no longer, you know, about is the ANC the right party to support. It simply comes down to, do you want to save South Africa or not? It sort of, you don't want to speak in hyperbole, but it really is the current predicament
where we're at. Absolutely. Unfortunately, we do need to leave it there. Fascinating conversation. Daniel Eloff, thank you for joining us. Daniel is a writer, lecturer, and attorney at Hunter Spitz, speaking to us about a tax revolt. What does that mean, and how does that play out?